Welcome to the Collector's Show, where you'll learn insider secrets about collecting everything. Best places to buy, how to judge authenticity, and what are the collectibles of the next generation. Here's your host, Harold Nickel.
Well, I'm really glad you found us during Thanksgiving week. If you're listening to the program in real time, you know that Thursday of this week is Thanksgiving. And if you have time shifted or found the program later, it isn't. In any case, 52 weeks a year, you get a new version of the Collector's Show. And through the magic of technology, you can listen just about any time. In our interview segment this week, we're going to learn about plumbing. And you may recall last week, we learned about a guy who collected bedpans. Well, it turns out that there's a lot more to collecting plumbing than we ever knew. We're going to meet a woman named Linda Viking. She works at the only plumbing museum in the world. And we're going to learn a lot about not just collecting different kinds of tools and different kinds of fixtures that relate to plumbing, but the surprising knowledge that plumbing keeps us all healthier than we have any way of knowing. It's not just a convenience or something that we only miss when it's not around. Plumbing has probably saved your life during the interview segment. First, of course, we're going to look at some news items. I don't know how I didn't see this when it first came out. Maybe because I have to read dozens of different things to get ready for the program, but there was an Expo postcard sale back in late October, and this article was in Antique Trader, which I really enjoy, and it was about a man who collected postcards. Danny Danielson became a postcard collector in 1979. He did it while he was visiting his mother during his Christmas vacation. She apparently had some old postcards in her store, and he liked them, so he decided to start collecting them. Danny was a grain inspector. He lived in the Midwest, and he went all over the place inspecting grain silos and grain, and he used all of his travel to expand his postcard collection. He ended up with a lot of historic photography, like, for example, a 1908 photo of Ty Cobb. That postcard was worth around $600. Others in his collection went from between $1,000 and $1,500. But the one that really got my attention was his collection of Santa Claus cards, because they were, some of them, not all of them, were called hold-to-light cards, and they were made just after the turn of the 20th century. And they reveal different colored lights within the postcard scene. And some of the most famous cards he owns are from Halloween and from Christmas. And some of these portraits, I guess you'd call them, were drawn by Samuel Smucker and Ellen Clapsaddle. So the kind of glow-in-the-dark art that we sometimes see associated not with not with postcards. So anyway, the point of the story was glow-in-the-dark postcards from the early 20th century were part of Danny Danielson, grain collector and postcard collector, grain inspector, postcard collector, that I thought was interesting. We haven't done a show recently, or at least in the last 14 months, on postcards. I think it may be high time. Let's talk about coin collecting. Not just any old kind, Bitcoin collecting. Latin for nighttime sun is sol noctis. It's Latin for that, and it's also the first in a series of real proof collectible coins denominated in Bitcoin. The first coin of the series got the name of the binary eagle. I don't know what that means. Two eagles, maybe, but it's a pure silver coin. It's proof quality, and it's got a built-in 0.01 Bitcoin value. that is set to attract coin collectors and Bitcoin enthusiasts. I don't know what has kept the Bitcoin people out of Leavenworth, because I don't think it's legal to create your own money. Somehow these guys are doing it. And there's always something written about collecting coins. And I don't do a lot of items in the news about coins, but this one really got my attention because of the whole Bitcoin phenomena and a piece of silver in Bitcoin denominations. The creator says, "We created Sol Noctis to mark the point where the two worlds meet, traditional numismatics and a payment system of the future. And so to push the limits of both of them, it's a thrill to integrate such a unique and universal cryptocurrency into a high quality physical product." It's, you know, if I saw one, if I knew how to get one, I'd probably get one of these. Bitcoins are, there's a lot of intrigue around Bitcoins, and I'll just kind of leave it at that. Lastly, from right here in my home state of Texas, a guy who owns a bunch of cars, he auctioned off 130 of his cars. He, of course, Texas businessman Sam Pack, he decided to sell 130 of his 500-strong car collection. He is among one of the world's greatest car collectors, and he had different cars that he sold: a rare 425-horsepower 1967 Shelby 427 Cobra. That's a million-dollar car. He's a 77-year-old Dallas area Ford dealer and antique car collector. He's the CEO of Pack Auto. He doesn't often sell his cars, and it doesn't really say in the article why. His museum isn't really open to the public. It's something he keeps for himself and his employees, and occasionally a charitable event or a fundraiser. But if you have a lot of cars and you don't feel like sharing, I guess this is the way to go. Or you feel like selling a few of them off and make a few extra million for Christmas shopping, I guess. Car collecting is interesting. It's interesting that this man, you know, both his vocation and avocation revolved around cars. But boy, do you need a lot of room to collect cars? I mean, if you don't have a barn or some kind of a big arena, you're going to have a hard time collecting cars. And 500 cars in a collection, that's like, I don't know, that's a really big place you'd need to keep them all out of the rain. And who's going to wash them all for you? Anyway, that's the news from the world of collecting for this week. Kind of a slow week in collecting news, but as the year gets later, less and less happens. It's true of collecting news, and it's true of so many other things. Okay, next, we're going to learn about plumbing, collecting plumbing, and the importance of plumbing, not just as a convenience, but for civilization in general. Next, on The Collector Show with me, Harold Nickel. I absolutely hate not being able to find things, whether it's my car keys, my golf shoes, or you name it. I just hate looking for stuff. Well, there's one thing I'm not going to have to look for very hard anymore. It's flea markets, because I now have the Flea Market Finder app on both my iPhone and my iPad. Now, if you're listening to this program, you're a collector. You either collect something and you want to sell your collection, or you're looking for that one last item that will complete a set in your collection, and you're going to be going to flea markets looking for that one thing. You can find flea markets and thrift shops way, way faster now with the Flea Market Finder app. And not only do they list flea markets, but they also list thrift shops. They have over 10,000 different flea markets and thrift shops listed already, and it's so easy to use. You just enter your location and the number of miles from where you are to find flea markets. Now, I entered my address, my location, and I put 50 miles radius, and I live pretty close to Houston. And it came back with literally pages of flea markets and thrift shops I could go to where I could sell something or, more likely, buy something that's going to complete a collection. It's very, very simple to use. And if you're listening to a podcast, you know everything you need to know about downloading and using the Flea Market Finder app. Now, the price is right. It's free. They have a pro version that costs a whopping 99 cents, and that's the version I got. But it delivers a tremendous value. It saves you time. And how many Saturdays have you combed the classifieds looking for a garage sale or a thrift shop or a flea market? How many hours have you spent in front of your computer going cross-eyed looking for a flea market to get that one thing? Well, those days are over. You're going to give yourself a lot of time back. It's also convenient because not only does it list the flea markets, it will draw you a map of how to get there, and it even lists a phone number. The Flea Market Finder app could potentially revolutionize collecting as we know it. Like I say, it's for your iPhone or for your iPad. I have both, and you get it from the iTunes Store. The Flea Market Finder app, go get it today from the iTunes Store. And while you're at it, subscribe to The Collector Show.
Splish splash, I was taking a bath, long about a Saturday night. Yeah. A rub dub, just relaxing in the tub, thinking everything was alright. Well, I stepped out the tub, put my feet on the floor, I wrapped the towel around me and I opened the door, and in a splish splash, I jumped back in the bath. Well, how was I to know there was a party going on? It was a splishing and a splash.
Well, welcome to the interview segment of The Collector Show. You know, last week during the news segment, I told you about a man who collected bedpans. And man, that just got me thinking about that topic and about the bigger picture, which of course leads to plumbing. So this week, we're going to talk plumbing and fixtures and history with Linda Viking. Linda is the event coordinator with the Plumbing Museum, located, I'm sure, ironically, in Watertown, Massachusetts. And Linda, welcome to The Collector Show.
Why, thank you, Harold, for having me.
Yeah. Well, let's dive right in, so to speak. What was the beginning or the genesis of the Plumbing Museum? Who started it and how come?
Well, the Plumbing Museum was started by the Manoog family, which was a plumbing family in Worcester, Massachusetts. And Mr. Manoog is typical of any plumber that does not throw anything away.
Mm-hmm.
So he started making a collection himself, and then his son decided to show some of the things that his father had collected. And in 1979, he opened up the American Sanitary and Plumbing Museum in Worcester, Massachusetts.
That's so cool, because I think what's typical of not just plumbers, but a lot of people who are collectors, is their reluctance to throw anything away. Did his collection start with anything in particular or just plumbing stuff in general?
I think just plumbing stuff in general, but as the Plumbing Museum started to gain notoriety, there were people that would call and donate things to the museum.
And were they other plumbers like him, or were they other collectors, or a little bit of both?
Some were plumbers, and some were people that just didn't know what to do with what they had.
Yeah.
Things that were left in a home, and they didn't know what to do with it. They didn't want to throw it out. And they wanted it to be seen, so they donated it to the museum.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of, well, maybe a lot is too much of a stretch, but certainly the museums, the specialty museums that we've talked to here on the Collector Show, started out a lot like this one. It was someone who had a vocation or an avocation and felt like the things that they owned had value.
Yes.
Some way.
Yes.
And wanted to share that with the world.
Yes, you're right.
Well, we're going to get back and finish our conversation with Linda about all things plumbing. But just for a few minutes, I want to talk with you about the Life 360 app. You know, I started talking to you about Life 360, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. And I think I gave you an example of a time when my wife and I were living in Maryland and Hurricane Sandy was blowing through. And the folks that I worked for then insisted that everybody come to work. Well, it worried my wife, and she says, of course, you know, call me when you get there. If I had had the Life 360 app on my cell phone, she would have known exactly where I was at any time, because the Life 360 app uses signals from your cell phone to let your loved ones know where you are. So if you've arrived at your office safely, if you stopped for coffee along the way, or if you were blown into the Chesapeake Bay, she would have known and felt better about my situation. Should I wait for Harold to call? Should I call the Coast Guard? Any of those things are possible because of the Life 360 app. And all kidding aside, you don't need me to tell you that the world is a more dangerous and complicated place than ever. Life 360 delivers a benefit that no other app can, and that's peace of mind and knowing where your loved ones are at any given time. And the price is right. It's free. So you can go to iTunes or you can go to Google Play. It will work on an iPhone or an Android. Go get the Life 360 app today. You will be extremely happy that you did. And now we'll return to our conversation about plumbing. How many visitors do you get in a typical year?
It's grown. I would have to say probably now we're up to maybe 800, 900 a year.
Yeah.
And that's, we also do events.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm having my third wedding, believe it or not, coming up December 6th.
Wow.
So we do a lot of events here, too.
Now, why did these folks on the 6th and in general, why do they choose to have their wedding there?
Well, you know, somebody asked me that this morning. Why would anybody want to get married in a plumbing museum? Every one of them wanted a different venue, something different. They wanted a small wedding, and this is actually a perfect place. It's beautiful at night, even with the collections, and the acoustics are beautiful, and it's a happy place. And,
yeah.
And like I said, when people come, they say, oh, the plumbing museum. Now, you can imagine what people think when they get a wedding invitation and the wedding says it's going to be at the plumbing museum.
Yeah.
What people are thinking.
Yeah,
everybody that leaves say they had a great time and was nothing at all like they expected.
Yeah, in my other life, I did events and we would rent or lease venues and halls and things like that. So I don't recall though ever doing anything at a plumbing museum.
No. We're the only plumbing museum, as far as I know, in the world.
Oh, that's a good...
There is a toilet museum in New Delhi, India, that's run by a doctor. And he has some beautiful, beautiful pieces of actually toilets. But we're the only plumbing museum, and we've really come a long way. We opened up in 2009 here, and the response has been really great. We got a front page write-up last year in December on the Wall Street Journal.
No kidding.
No, I was very much surprised. I never knew I would make the front page of the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, that's really something.
But it was great because people from all over the country, when they come out here, out to the east, sometimes to visit Cape Cod or whatever, or family, they were so inquisitive that they have come and they have visited. And it's not at all what people think, really. It's a fun place.
So all of these different kinds of tools and objects and things of plumbing, what of those items, what do you have the most of? Do you have wrenches or what?
We have our own, we call it the 1920s plumber's workshop, and we have quite a collection of tools. We have wrenches, we have pipe cutters, we have a table that is specifically made for leading. And, of course, up until 1965, all your pipe was joined by lead. And that was a very arduous task for a plumber. He had to have special tools, most of which were made of wood, in order to join pipe. And if you could not join pipe or wipe a joint, you were not given your plumber's license.
Wow. So the standards for being a plumber have always been, it sounds like, pretty high. But the wooden tools, tell us about those and what of those are in your collection.
Well, we have one that is a mallet, and we have another one that is one of my favorites. It's a cone shape. It's solid wood, and what you would do is you would put it into the pipe and bang it into the pipe to flare the pipe in order to join a larger piece of pipe. You would take out that wooden piece and then join it and then wipe your joint. But all of these tools had to be brought on the job while you were working. And some of them, of course, are extremely, extremely heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine so. It's a tough line of work, and it sounds like it requires a lot of training. Now, for the people who visit the museum, what are their expectations when they get there, and what do they say as they leave?
Well, people actually don't know what to expect when they come through the door. They laugh. They say, the plumbing museum, what's this all about? they come through. I give them the tour. And as they leave, they're astounded. It was nothing like they had anticipated. I can tell stories about different things. Some of the exhibits we have are really, truly lovely. Some of them, I feel, are almost art.
What's your favorite one?
There's an 1891 toilet called the Nautilus.
Wow.
With a wooden seat. And it's a beautiful piece. Another one is a 1860s water, they call it a earth closet. And earth was put into the tank. And when you get off of the seat, as you close the top of the seat, it would activate underneath a lever that would put dirt or earth over the excrement.
Mm.
So it actually did two things back then. It stopped the gases or the odor, and once it was filled, you could empty it and put it in your garden.
Huh.
So you had actually an eco-friendly toilet back in the 1860s.
Sustainable plumbing over 100 years ago, and you bring up a good point because I don't really think, and I certainly didn't until I started doing the research for talking with you today, how important plumbing is to the maintenance of health. Do you know of any diseases that aren't really prevalent anymore because of plumbing?
Well, one of the biggest diseases was, of course, cholera.
Mm-hmm.
Cholera in the mid-19th century killed thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and it went from country to country to continent to continent. And, of course, it was from unsafe water supply. Today, we still, in our world, unfortunately, do not have sufficient water supply or sanitation for people. There are 2.6 billion people in this world without sanitation.
Wow.
1.3 million babies die every year because of poor sanitation.
Mm.
and 2 million people die of diarrheal disease, 88% of which is attributed to the unsafe water supply.
So as a convenience, it's not just something that I guess here in the U.S. we almost or completely do take for granted. It's important to the maintenance of everybody's health and well-being, and the people who don't have it really miss it.
Absolutely. And once I tell the people the statistics and things like that, and I say, you know, today if we're buying a house, we don't even want to look at a house if it doesn't have two bathrooms in it.
Oh, isn't that right?
and how spoiled are we?
Extremely.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
How can we find you? How can we visit the museum and reach you for a tour?
Well, we're at 80 Rosedale Road here in Watertown, Massachusetts. You can contact me, of course, by email, and the email is info@theplumbingmuseum.org. You can also call me at 617-926-2111. And we have, of course, our blog. We have the Water Closet blog. We're on Facebook under The Tradesman.
Oh, cool. Now,
and today is, of course, ironic that you called today because today is World Toilet Day. Did you know that, Errol?
I did not.
Well.
I'll be darned. Well, I don't believe in coincidences. I think our conversation today, it was meant to be.
Yes.
Now,
yes, I'm so happy you called.
Now, the location in Watertown, is that was that somebody's idea of a joke, or is that just a coincidence?
That happens to be a coincidence. When the Manuk family decided to retire, they didn't know what to do with the collection. And the company that I work for, the Canestraro Company here in Watertown, has a ice house, an old ice house that is attached to our corporate office. And our president, John Canestraro, said to the Manute family, bring it here. So what he did was he went into construction and took all the walls down right to the original walls of the ice house. So the collection now is housed in the ice house here in Watertown.
Well, I joke or coincidence, it's pretty darn funny if you ask me. And Linda Viking from the Plumbing Museum, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy World Toilet Day celebration to be with us on the Collector Show.
Why, thank you so much for calling.
More in a minute. Stay tuned. Well, I want to thank Linda for taking time out of her work to talk to us about the Plumbing Museum. And, you know, on this program, you don't have to listen very long to know that, yes, we talk about traditional types of collectibles. We talk about comics and we talk about sports collectibles. But the programs that stand out, at least in my memory, are the ones where we talk about the less traditional types of collectibles. And going into this show, I did not really expect to learn about how important plumbing is to civilization. And you heard her talk about how many people die of diseases that are incredibly preventable if only for plumbing, people's quality of lives would improve dramatically. So a lot of times when we talk on this show, we have fun and approach things as kind of a goof, but this isn't one of those times. At least it didn't end up that way, because the importance of an event like World Toilet Day really brought to my attention how incredibly lucky I am and how incredibly lucky we all are to live where we do and to have conveniences like clean water and plumbing so much that we just take it all for granted. And like you heard her say, if you're looking at a house or an apartment and doesn't have two bathrooms in it, you don't look at it twice, whereas most of the people living in the world are dying for modern plumbing. Next week on The Collector Show. If things work out like I hope they will, we'll be talking about plastic model collecting, and we'll be talking with a man who lives in Tokyo, Japan. Now, he's an American from Arizona, but he collects plastic models, and I'm a huge fan of plastic models and plastic model kits, and had just a heck of a time finding somebody. If I can navigate time zones and, you know, either get up early or stay up late, we'll learn about that. So, to find out if Harold can get up early or stay up late to do his interview, come back next week to The Collector's Show here on Web Talk Radio.
Splish splash, I was taking a bath, long about a Saturday night. Yeah, rubbed up, just relaxing in the tub, thinking everything was all right. Well, I stepped out the tub, put my feet on the floor, I wrapped the towel around me and I opened the door, and in a splish splash, I jumped back in the bath. Well, I was out and know there was a party.